Shadow Falls Badlands. The story so far. Cyril enters the town of Sagebrush to find the remains of all who were killed by the coyote. He also senses Galen's presence and follows Altos' trail after burning the ghost town to the ground. But upon the trail, Cyril finds he's being followed by a man who appears to him with the remnants of burned wings coming from his back. That man is Briar Gent, and what he ultimately shares about Galen is enough to rattle Cyril down to the depths of whatever soul he has left. And so we begin part 3. Once it smiled a silent dell, where the people did not dwell. They had gone into the wars, trusting to the mild-eyed stars, nightly from their azure towers, to keep watch above the flowers, in the midst of which all day the red sunlight lazily lay. Now each visitor shall confess the sad valley's restlessness. Nothing there is motionless. Nothing save the airs that brood over the magic solitude. Ah, by no wind are stirred those trees that palpitate like the chill seas around the misty Hebrides. Ah, by no wind those clouds are driven that rustle through the unquiet heaven uneasily from morn till even. Over the violets that there lie in the myriad types of the human eye, over the lilies there that wave and weep above a nameless grave, they wave from out their fragrant tops. Eternal dews come down in drops. They weep from off their delicate stems. Perennial tears descend in gems. The Valley of Unrest by Edgar Allan Poe. Chapter 18. She was swept up in the air. Her body is limp as a rag doll. Even in the dead of night, he could see it all perfectly, her bare feet swinging back and forth slightly, toes pointed downward toward the majestic's wooden deck. He kept waiting for her to open her eyes, to see the peril in front of her. But it never happened, as she was lifted higher until the man holding Anne Walsh tipped her over the starboard side rail, where she fell wordlessly and was swallowed whole by the churning black waves of the Atlantic Ocean. The deed was done. As her body tumbled lifelessly into the abyss, the man in the frock coat turned, without so much as spotting him. Galen came too, just as the sunrise brought with it the sound of birds in flight, taking off toward the sky on their way to warmer climes. One, a single black crow, had stayed behind and cawed angrily at Galen from the top of a nearby tree. From which direction, Galen was not sure, for this marked his third dawn in the pillory, and he was unable to raise his head due to the agonizing strain that being confined in this posture had caused on his neck. One thing for sure was Galen had been certain that crow was the same that had shown up yesterday, and sat in the trees, incessantly mocking him and constantly drawing closer. The bird, Galen reckoned, had already identified him as a trapped and tasty morsel, and was sitting back just biding its time until Galen died and it could sup on Galen's body. Or perhaps if it grew impatient enough, it would realize its prey was powerless to fight back and would swoop down to greedily take Galen's eyes. In a few hours, the boy would arrive with the bucket to splash water in Galen's face and place a palmful of wet gruel into his open mouth. The bucket boy had no fear of Galen trying to bite off his fingertips in the process, for Galen was too weak to put up any kind of fight. If they had intended to squelch his bravado, then they had done so quite effectively. He was currently using whatever physical strength he had left to keep himself on his feet, no matter how much the muscles in his legs burned and cried out for relief. If they were to give out, his body weight against the wooden stock would surely strangle him. and with the distinct possibility that his subsequent death would only be temporary. Such a hellish scenario could indeed repeat itself over and over again, without end. While his body fought desperately to remain upright, Galen's mind battled its own demons. When darkness fell, the nightmarish visions would creep in to haunt him. He struggled to keep his eyes open, to overcome the exhaustion of it all. But even so, they came in the form of some horrible waking dream he could not escape. His mind vacillated between moments of mental twilight and complete delirium. It was here the scene of the burning church replayed itself again and again. The screams and helpless cries. Quickly they moved, the ones still alive, feet shuffling down the rickety steps, their panicked voices muffled by hands and sleeves over their mouths to block the smoke from their lungs. "Hurry!" Galen yelled, and blindly they followed his every word and threw themselves into the dark, round hole in the ground, desperately trying a last-ditch escape from the fate that awaited in the conflagration upstairs. In their terrified voices, they screamed as their bodies thudded against each other, the thick, wet sounds of flesh on bone and bone on rock as they hit bottom. "That sound!" Galen's mind cried, because his voice could not. "That maddening sound!" Men and women falling down a well turned into the image of the body of Ann Walsh tumbling into the ocean, and the man in the frock coat, his face completely visible. But this time, it seemed as if the gaze of this very man lingered on him longer than it had in any of his other visions. This time, it stared knowingly back into Galen's eyes, showing a very distinct glimmer of recognition, until the vision faded into nothingness. And as Galen's mind cried for the images appearing before him to stop, the scene faded back into a dusty, sun-beaten haze. Dozens of ruddy, red faces peered up at him as he stood above them on the gallows, their voices calling out for his neck. And in the moment the noose was being slipped over his head, he saw the man standing unnoticed among the angry crowd. The man with the remains of two burnt wings protruding from his back. And Galen could only watch the man's lips silently move. But it was the man's eyes, his dark and piercing eyes, that bore into Galen's brain, drawing the two of them together. He could see those eyes, as he saw them before, turning toward him. And now they were back in the church, as the man crackled, "Brother Thomas, do something." And with a whoosh, again it was all gone. The fire, the church, and once more, he was on the deck of the Majestic. "Father," Galen's voice croaked out loud. But there was no answer. Instead, as he blinked, he found himself again standing on the gallows with the rope around his neck, the cheering faces of Sagebrush's poor, calling out for his death. "Father," he asked again, but as the trapdoor opened under his feet and his head jerked upwards, this time he was vaulted back into consciousness by way of someone holding a handful of his hair. Galen wanted to cry out but couldn't, for his mind was still trying to process the face of the hooded woman leaning forward to stare directly into his eyes. Nana cocked her head at Galen, trying to read his face. Here in the daylight, he could finally make out her pupils, which appeared like two cut pieces of raw jade. "What did you see?" she asked. Galen let out no answer save for a low grunt. "I asked, what did you see?" Nana bellowed. Again Galen held his tongue, which angered Nana to the point of violence. She yanked hard on the handful of hair again, hard enough to pull a good portion of it out by the roots. "Let him out," she hissed. The pockmarked man produced a set of iron keys on a ring He opened the pillory lock and with a grunt lifted the heavy upper half of the stock off its frame. Immediately, Galen fell backward, slipping through the neck and wrist cutouts before collapsing on the ground. As he lay there, he could smell the reek coming from him. Nana did too, because she turned her head away from Galen and ordered Bucket Boy to douse him with water from head to toe. The splash caught Galen as he gasped for air, and he inhaled it into his lungs and began coughing. "I'm gonna drown on bare land," he started thinking. The irony. He laughed and a chortle escaped his mouth.
"What is so funny?"
demanded Nana. Galen couldn't help himself. That which started as an innocuous slip had grown into full gales of laughter.
"I said, what is so funny?"
Nana roared this time, obviously losing patience. Enraged, the man with the pockmarked face grabbed the wooden bucket from the boy's hand and with one swing smashed it over Galen's head. The boy turned, as to not be hit with flying pieces of his former vessel.
"Shut your goddamn mouth!"
he shouted down at Galen, who had been dazed and nearly knocked unconscious by the blow. Galen groaned and tried to reach up to touch his head, but his arms were so weakened by his confinement that even lifting them was impossible. Days locked in the pillory made his limbs feel as if they were now encased in stone. All that was left of the bucket in the pockmarked man's grip was the steel handle, and he tossed that aside and grabbed Galen by one of his arms and began dragging him across the grass. Galen tried to cry out in agony, as it felt as if his arm would be dislocated from its socket. But when he looked up, he saw he was being dragged to a circle of about 24 men. The circle opened, and the men parted to allow them inside. And immediately Galen spotted the pole which had been erected in the ground. His eyes opened wide in horror as he thought of what they had done to Maria, and weakly he tried to fight and pull away. Stubbornly, he dug his heels into the dirt, refusing to be moved. In his mind, he willed for his physical strength to return, and with one swift movement, pulled away from his surprised captor. "Get up, damn it," his mind screamed at him, and as he could feel his legs start to respond, dozens of hands were on him. The men from the circle had descended upon Galen and were pulling him upwards toward the pole. In moments, he was pinned as one man lashed his hands above his head and another used a knife to cut his clothes away and stripped him naked. "Burn them," Nana motioned toward Galen's stinking and fetid shirt and pants, clothes that originally belonged to Maria's dead husband, but were now ruined by Galen's blood, sweat, and waste from being confined in them. Galen turned his head toward Nana, but the cut that had been opened up over his eye by the bucket was oozing blood, and he could not see through it. "She has something in her hand," he thought. "What is it? A torch?" He tried to squint, but he couldn't make it out through his clouded vision. But as she got closer and raised her hand, Galen could clearly see the whip. Crack! The leather sounded as the lash snapped against Galen's chest, forcing his pent-up scream to birth itself from his upturned mouth. Before the sound of Galen's wail could die down, Nana's whip hissed through the air, cutting a line across Galen's stomach so deep the crimson droplets surfaced from the now raised and reddened flesh. Again, Galen screamed into the air, his head arching back, straining against the veins bulging in his neck. From Nana's other hand came something, and she shoved it in Galen's face. Flinching, he turned away, but something, a force beyond his control, pulled his gaze toward it again. Through the blood covering his vision, he could see it, and recoiled in horror. In Nana's hand was the eye, the same cursed thing he had left behind after fleeing Kansas City. But as she held it up to his face, Galen could see it was different. Whereas the eye he had killed the gypsy crone for was perfectly preserved, the one in Nana's hand appeared to be chipped and yellowed with age. He was pulled into the singular gaze of the eyeball, and once more his mind flashed to a vision. one of columns of demons marching up from the depths of the abyss, their legions clashing headlong with winged warrior angels. The scorched earth left only as a scarred battlefield. The vision was torn away from his mind as Nana pulled away the eye. "What did you see?" she demanded. As Galen's own gaze fell to the ground, she seemed to register the answer that she was looking for. "Where did you get that evil thing?" grunted Galen weakly. "This eye and its twin were carved out of the skull of my father after he put a bullet in his head and left us in the woods to die. This eye belonged to William Lawton, for I began life as his daughter Allison. And if I'm not mistaken, you are my older brother Thomas." And that was chapter 18 of Shadow Falls Badlands. I guess that answers that question. Perhaps it's now time for Galen to come to terms with everything he's seen and heard so far. And whether he does remains to be seen or heard on an upcoming chapter of Shadow Falls Badlands. Hey, help spread the word about Shadow Falls Badlands. Tell your friends. Burn a CD. Send a link. And also shoot me an email at shadowfalls@podshowla.com with all of your comments and feedback. Big thanks to Monk for providing us with the Shadow Falls Badlands Part 3 theme song, the acoustic version of I Am Molly's theme. You can find Monk at waxboy.com. So until we meet again, Shadow Boys and Shadow Girls, this is Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov fading to black. I just begun. Dead wrong. The rusted gate that swings both ways never asked my name. I am here, I am near, I am there while you're sleeping. I am soft, my words are floating off. Look for my sign.